What if the source is a group of magicians? How would I recognize them?
Unfortunately, Ixia doesn't have a uniform for magicians, Iris said, her voice sharp with sarcasm. Instead of searching for them, look for an empty room with a wagon wheel design painted on the floor. To link magical power, each magician must be perfectly aligned along the edge of a circle.
I can search the manor, but I need help, I said. I need Valak.
You'll need a miracle, Iris replied with a wry twist to her lips.
Can you direct Valak here?
He's already on his way. You two have forged a strong connection, although I don't know if it's of magical origin.
Iris pursed her lips.
I'd better go before Valak arrives.
When and if you discover the source of Mogkin's extra power, chant my name in your mind.
I'll hear your call because we too have created a bond. Our mental link grows stronger each time we communicate. I'll try to help you with the commander, but no promises. I'm after Mogkin.
She disappeared into the forest. While I waited for Valak, I paced on the packed dirt and tried to think of a way to find Mogkin's power source. Iris's words about needing a miracle were, indeed, an understatement. To distract myself, I focused on my surroundings. The tread of many feet had rubbed out the grass and trampled the earth until it was worn smooth and shiny. I remembered digging my heels into this same hard dirt the last time I was here, when Rayad dragged me to the manor house to punish me for disobeying him and winning the amulet. I had pressed that prize so tight against my skin it had left a mark. Then I had hidden it to keep it out of Rayad's cruel hands. 2 years had passed since I buried my amulet. Someone had probably discovered it by now. For an exercise, I tried using my new magical skill. Directing my awareness downward, I circled the clearing. I made many circuits and was growing bored, when suddenly the soles of my feet felt hot. When I continued, they cooled. I moved here and there until once more, heat stabbed my feet. Taking my grappling hook from my pack, I dug at the spot. My efforts revealed some fabric. I tossed my hook aside and clawed at the ground with my fingernails, uncovering my lost amulet. It was dull and covered with dirt. The ribbon that held it was torn and stained. Pressing the flame-shaped amulet against my chest, I felt warmth emanating from it. I put it down to fill the hole, humming a tune. Cleaning the palm-sized metal on my pants, I strung it onto the necklace chain with Valak's butterfly.
Not the best hiding place, wouldn't you agree? Valak asked. I jumped. How long had he been standing behind me?
They're searching for you. Why did you run? He asked.
I briefed Valak on the commander, Mogkin, the factory, and the advisors, hoping he would draw the same conclusions I had.
So Mogkin is using Criollo to take control of their minds, but where's he getting the power? Valak asked.
I don't know. We need to search the manor.
You mean I need to?
No, we. I grew up there. I know every inch.
The first place I wanted to look was in Rayad's laboratory wing.
When do we start?
Now. We have 4 hours till dawn.
What are we looking for?
When I explained that we were seeking either a circle of diamonds or a painted wheel, Valak's thin eyebrows puckered as if he wanted to question me about how I had come by this information. He held his peace and headed back toward the barracks. I hid outside while Valak changed into his black skin-tight sneak suit. He brought me a dark-colored shirt to wear over my bright red uniform shirt, and carried an unlit bullseye lantern. My cloak would be too cumbersome for creeping through the halls, so I hid it in the bushes. We found a back door near the servants' quarters. Valak lit the lantern. Pushing the slide almost closed, he allowed only a thin ray of light to escape. Inside the manor, I took the lead. Rayad's suite was in the east wing on the ground floor, opposite the laboratory. The entire wing had been his, and there were a number of doors that he'd kept locked while I had been the resident laboratory rat. Old horrors haunted me as we searched. My skin felt tight and hot. I recognized the faint acidic aroma of fear that mixed with the dust stirred by our footsteps. It was my smell. I had worn it like a perfume whenever Rayad dragged me to his test.
The thick air pressed down on me, filling my mouth with the taste of ashes and blood. I had bitten my hand without conscious thought. It was an old habit, a way to stifle my cries. Exploring the laboratory room, the thin lantern's beam spotlighted instruments hanging from the walls and piled on the tables. Each revelation sent a cold, numbing pulse through my body, and I shrank away from the large shadows of equipment unrevealed, unwilling to even brush against them. The room resembled a torture chamber rather than a place for experiments. Feeling like an animal pierced in the metal jaws of a trap, I wanted to scream and bolt from the room. Why had I brought Valak here? Brazel's advisors were housed on the second floor. Modkin's diamond device, if there was such a thing, was probably hidden near his room, not down here. Valak hadn't said a word since lighting the lantern. In the hallway outside Rayad's bedroom, a physical force prevented me from entering. My muscles trembled. An icy sweat soaked my uniform. I waited at the door while Valak went in. I could see the dark, malevolent shape of Rayad's sadistic toy chest lurking in a corner of the room. If I burned that chest to cinders, I wondered, would my nightmares cease?
Not if I can help it, Rayad's ghost said, materializing beside me in the hallway.
I jerked back, hitting the wall. A yelp escaped my lips before I could shove my hand into my mouth. I thought you were gone for good, I whispered.
Never, Yelena. I will always be with you. My blood has soaked into your soul. You have no chance of cleansing me away.
I have no soul, I said under my breath. Rayad laughed.
Your soul is drenched black with the blood of your victims, my dear. That is why you can't see it. When you die, that heavy, blood-filled essence will sink to the bottom of the earth, where you will burn in eternity for your crimes.
From the voice of experience, I whispered with a rage that made my voice hiss.
Valak came out of Rayad's room. With a face pale as bone, he stared at me with a horrified expression so long that I wondered if he had been struck dumb. Finally, closing the door, Valak walked past the ghost without seeing him, then stopped at the next locked room, pausing a moment with his head bowed to press a hand to his forehead.
There's someone who really needs to be haunted, Rayad said, stabbing a ghostly white finger at Valak. It's a shame he doesn't let his demons bother him, because I know a certain dead king that would love to plague him.
Rayad looked at me.
Only the weak invite their demons to live with them. Isn't that right?
I refused to answer Rayad as I followed Valak. We continued our search, but it was obvious that, other than the laboratory, the wing had been abandoned. There were three doors left. While Valak picked the two locks, Rayad chatted on.
My father will soon send you to me, Yelena. I'm looking forward to spending eternity with you. He leered and wiggled his fingers at me.
But I was no longer interested in the ghost. The contents of the room before me riveted my attention. Inside, dozens of women and a few men flinched from the yellow beam of Valak's lantern. Greasy hair obscured their dirt-streaked faces. Rags clung to their emaciated bodies. None of them spoke or cried out. To my increasing horror, I realized they were chained to the floor, in circles. One outer circle and two inner rings with lines painted between them. When Valak and I stepped into the room, the foul stench of unwashed bodies and excrement wafted through the air. Gagging, I covered my mouth. Valak moved among them, asking questions. Who are you? Why are you here? His queries were met with silence. Their vacant eyes followed his passage. They remained where they were chained, staring. I began to recognize some of the grubby faces. They had lived in the orphanage with me. They were the older girls and boys who had graduated and were supposed to be employed throughout the district. The sight of one girl, her ginger hair dull and matted, finally made me cry out in pain. Kara's soft brown eyes held no sign of intelligence as I stroked her shoulder and whispered her name. The free-spirited girl I had cared for in the orphanage had become a mindless, empty shell of a woman.
My students, Rayad said.
His chest puffed out in pride as he floated in the middle of the room.
the ones who didn't fail.
What now? I asked Valak with a shaky voice.
You're arrested and thrown in the dungeon, Mogkin answered from the entrance.
Valak and I spun in unison. Mogkin loomed in the doorway, his arms folded across his chest. Valak charged him. Fury blazed in his eyes. Mogkin stepped back into the hallway. I saw Valak stop just past the doorway and raise his hands in the air. Damn, I thought, racing to help him. Mogkin stood like a coward behind 8 guards. The tips of their swords were aimed mere inches from Valak's chest. Chapter 30. As sword points pricked my back, I watched Valak, expecting him to spring into action during the whole miserable trip to Brazel's holding cells. I waited for him to blur into motion as they stripped and searched us, enduring the humiliation of being prodded and poked by rough hands as they confiscated my backpack, switchblade, and necklace. Losing my clothing didn't upset me as much as losing Valak's butterfly and my amulet. I prepared for a sudden jailbreak when we were led down into the prison, and was still waiting as we were shoved into adjoining cells. I held my breath as the heavy metal lock clanged shut on our underground chambers. The soldiers tossed our clothing in through the bars. Then they left, abandoning us to blackness. I fumbled with my uniform, trying to button my shirt in the dark. Here I was again. A nightmare turned real as we went through the guard room, down one flight of steps, and into Brazel's small dungeon, which only contained 8 cells, 4 on each side of a short corridor. Valak and I were in the 2 cells closest and to the left of the steps. A familiarly loud, rancid stench permeated the prison. The thick, silty air so overpowered my senses that it took me a while to realize we were the only occupants. Unable to bear the sudden quiet, I asked, "Valak?"
"What?"
"Why didn't you fight the guards? I would have helped you."
8 men had drawn swords pointed at my chest. Any sudden movement and I would have been skewered. I'm flattered that you think I could win against those odds. 4 armed opponents, maybe, but 8 is definitely too many. I could hear the amusement in Valak's voice.
Then we pick the locks and make our escape?
My confidence was based on the fact that Valak was a master assassin and trained fighter. A man who wouldn't stay confined for long.
That would be ideal, provided we had something to pick them with, Valak replied, dashing my hopes. I searched my cell with my hands, finding nothing but filthy straw, rat droppings, and unrecognizable muck. I sank to the floor with my back against the one stone wall I shared with Valak. After a long moment, Valak asked, "Was that your fate? If you hadn't killed Rayad, were you slated to be chained to the floor, mindless?" The image of those captives burned in my mind. My flesh crawled. For the first time, I was content to have failed Rayad's tests. As I thought more about them, I remembered a comment Iris had made regarding a magician's ability to steal magic from others. Finally, the significance of the women and men sitting in circles hit me. Mogkin's extra power came from those chained captives. Brazel, Rayad, and Mogkin must have screened the children of the orphanage for magical potential. Then, while experimenting on them, Mogkin had wiped their minds clean, leaving them mindless vessels from which to draw more power. I think Brazel and Rayad were determined to reduce me to that mental state, but I endured. I explained my theory about the captives to Valak.
"Tell me what happened to you," Valak said, his voice tight. I paused. Then my tale flowed from my lips, in bits and pieces at first, but the words soon gushed with the same speed as the tears streaking down my face. I didn't spare him any details. I didn't gloss over the unpleasant parts. Telling Valak everything about my 2 years as a laboratory rat, Rayad's tortures and torments, the cruel games, the humiliations, the beatings, the longing to be good for Rayad, and finally, the rape that led to murder, I purged myself of the black stain of Rayad. I felt lightheaded with the release. Valak remained silent throughout my disclosure, neither commenting nor questioning. Finally, with ice crystallizing in his voice, he said, "Brazel and Mogkin will be destroyed." Promise or a threat, I couldn't tell, but with all of Valak's force behind it, it was more than idle talk. As if they had heard their names, Brazel and Mogkin stepped through the main door of the dungeon. Four guards holding lanterns escorted them. They stopped at our cells.
"It's good to see you back where you belong," Brazel said to me. "My desire to feel your blood on my hands has tempted me, but Mogkin has kindly informed me of your fate, should you not receive your antidote."
Brazel paused and smiled with pure satisfaction.
"Seeing my son's killer writhing in excruciating pain will be better justice. I'll visit later to hear your screams. And if you beg me, I might put you out of your misery, just so I can breathe in the hot scent of your blood."
Brazel's gaze bored into Valak's cell.
"Disobeying a direct order is a capital offense. Commander Ambrose has signed your death warrant. Your hanging is scheduled for noon tomorrow."
Brazel cocked his head, appraising Valak like a thoroughbred.
"I think I shall have your head stuffed and mounted. You'll make an effective decoration in my office when I become commander."
Laughing, Brazel and Mogkin left the dungeon. The darkness that flowed in after them felt even heavier than before. It pressed against my chest, giving me a tight, panicky feeling around my ribs. I paced my cell. My emotions swung from sheer terror to overwhelming despondency. I kicked at the bars, threw straw into the air, and pounded on the walls. "Yelena," Valak finally said, "settle down. Get some sleep. You'll need your strength for tonight." "Oh, yeah, everyone needs to be well-rested to die," I said, but regretted my harshness when I remembered that Valak, too, faced death. "I'll try." I lay on the foul straw, knowing it was futile to try and rest. How could anyone sleep her last hours away? Apparently, I could. I woke with a cry. My nightmare about rats melded with reality as I felt a warm, furry mass resting on my legs. Leaping to my feet, I kicked the rodent. It crashed into the wall and skittered away. "Nice nap," Valak asked. "I've had better." My sleeping companion snored. Valak grunted in amusement. "How long was I out?" "It's hard to tell without the sun. I'm guessing it's close to sunset." I had received my last dose of antidote yesterday morning. That gave me until tomorrow morning to live, but the symptoms of the poison would take hold sometime tonight. "Valak, I have a confession." My throat closed. My stomach muscles contracted with such severity that I felt as if someone were trying to rip them from my body. "What's the matter?" "Stomach cramp from hell," I said, still gasping even though the pain had subsided. "Is this the start?" "Yes. They begin slowly, but soon the convulsions will be continuous." Another wave of agony hit, and I crumpled to the floor. When it passed, I crawled to my straw bed, waiting for the next assault. Unable to endure the anticipation and silence, I said, "Valak, talk to me. Tell me something to distract me." "Like what?" "I don't care. Anything." "Here's something you can take some comfort from. There's no poison called butterfly's dust." "What?" I wanted to scream at him, but a doubling over, vomit-inducing convulsion hit, causing my abdominal muscles to feel as if they were being shredded with a knife. When I was sensible again, Valak explained, "You're going to want to die, wish you were already dead, but in the end, you'll be quite alive." "Why tell me now?" "The mind controls the body. If you believed that you were going to die, then you might have died from that conviction alone." "Why wait until now to tell me?" I demanded, furious. He could have relieved my anguish. "A tactical decision." I bit back a nasty reply. I tried to see his logic, to put myself in his place. My training sessions with Ari and Jenko had included strategy and tactics. Jenko had compared sparring to a card game.
"Keep your best moves close to your chest, and only use them when you've nothing left," he had said.
An opportunity to escape might have presented itself during the day. In that case, Valak wouldn't have to show his last card and tell me about the poison. What about the cramps? I asked, just as another one seized my body. I rolled into a tight ball, hoping to relieve some of the pain, but to no avail.
Withdrawal symptoms.
From what?
Your so-called antidote, Valak said.
It's an interesting concoction. I use it to make someone sick. As the potion wears off, it produces stomach cramps worthy of a day in bed. It's perfect for putting someone temporarily out of commission without killing him. If you continue to drink it, then the symptoms are forestalled until you stop.
Of all the books I had studied, I didn't recall reading about a tonic like that. What's the name?
White Fright.
The knowledge that I wasn't going to die erased the frightened panic and helped me to endure the pain. I viewed each contraction as a step that must be taken in order for me to be free of the substance.
What about butterfly's dust? I asked.
Doesn't exist. I made it up.
It sounded good.
I needed some threat to keep the food tasters from running away without using guards or locked doors.
An unwelcome thought popped into my head.
Does the commander know it's a ruse?
If he did, Modkin would also know.
No, he believes you've been poisoned.
During the night, it was hard for me to remember that I had not been poisoned. Torturous cramps refused to release me. I crawled around the cell, retching and screaming. I was vaguely aware, at one point, of Brazel and Modkin gloating over me. I didn't care that they watched. I didn't care that they laughed. All I cared about was finding a position that would alleviate the pain. Finally, I fell into an exhausted sleep. I woke lying on the muck-covered floor of the cell, my right arm stretched through the bars. I marveled more over the fact that I clutched Valak's hand than the fact that I was alive.
Yelena, are you all right?
The concern in Valak's voice was evident.
I think so, I replied with a rasp. My throat burned with thirst.
A clank rang out as someone unlocked the prison door.
Play dead, Valak whispered, releasing my hand. Try to get them close to my cell, he instructed as two guards came into the dungeon.
I yanked my Valak-warmed hand into the cell and poked my ice-cold left hand out just as the men descended the stairs.
Damn, the stench down here's worse than a latrine after a brew party, said the guard holding the lantern.
You think she's dead? The second guard asked.
With my face to the wall, I closed my eyes and held my breath as the yellow light swept my body. The guard touched my hand.
Cold as snow-cat piss. Let's drag her out before she starts to rot. You think it smells bad now?
The snap of the lock was followed by a squeak of metal as the cell door opened. I concentrated on being a dead weight while the guard dragged me out by my feet. When the light moved away from me, I risked a peek. The guard with the lantern walked ahead to light the way, leaving my upper body in darkness. As we passed Valak's cell, I seized the bars with both hands.
Ugh, hold up, she's stuck.
On what? The lantern guard asked.
I don't know. Come back here with that bloody light.
I released my grip, hooking my arm inside the cell.
Back off, the lantern guard warned Valak.
His meaty hand tugged at my elbow, then he grunted softly. I opened my eyes in time to see the lantern's light extinguish as it toppled to the ground.
What the hell? The other man exclaimed.
He was still holding my feet. He backed away from Valak's bars. I bent my legs, pulling my body close to his boots. He yelped with surprise when I grabbed his ankles. He tripped and fell back. The sickening crunch of bone striking stone wasn't what I expected. His body went limp. I stood on shaky legs. Hearing a thud and the jingle of keys, I turned back in time to see Valak lighting the lantern. The other guard was propped against the bars, his head cocked at an unnatural angle. In the weak glow, I gazed at the prone form at my feet. The soldier's head had struck the edge of the bottom step. A black liquid began to pool around my boots. I had just killed another man. I began to tremble. A fourth man had died because of me. Had the robbing of my soul reduced me to a heartless killer? Did Valak feel any remorse or guilt when he took a life? I watched him through a veil of blood. Efficient as always, Valak stripped the dead guards of their weapons. "Wait here," he instructed. Unlocking the main door of the prison, he sprang through the entrance to the guard room. Shouts, grunts, and the sound of flesh striking flesh reached my ears as I waited on the stairway. No remorse, no guilt. Valak did what he had to for his side to win. When Valak motioned me to join him, I saw that blood had splattered on his face, chest, and arms. Three guards, either unconscious or dead, were strewn about the room. My backpack sat on a table, its contents scattered about. I stuffed everything back in while Valak tried to open the remaining locked door between freedom and us. Although meager, I wanted my possessions, including my butterfly and amulet, back. Once I wrapped the chain around my neck, I felt strangely optimistic. "Damn," Valak said. "What?" "The captain has the only key to this door. He will open it when it's time to change the guards." "Try these." I handed Valak my picks. He grinned. While he worked on the lock, I found a pitcher of water and a wash barrel. The fear of being caught couldn't override the desire to rinse off my face and hands. But that was not enough. The need to rid myself of the stench of vomit and blood overpowered me. Soon I was dumping buckets of water over my head until I was soaked through. I drained half the water pitcher before I thought to offer some to Valak. He stopped to drink, then continued to pick the lock. Finally, it popped open. Valak peered out into the hallway. "Perfect. No guards." He pulled the door wide. "Let's go." Taking my hand and a lantern, Valak turned away from our only escape and led me back down into the prison, pausing to leave the door to the cells wide open as well. "Are you insane?" I whispered as he dragged me toward the last cell. "Freedom's that way," I pointed. He ignored me as he unlocked the door. "Trust me, this is the perfect hiding spot. The mess we left will soon be discovered, the open door's proof we fled." Valak pushed me ahead of him into the cell. "Search parties will be sent out. When all the soldiers have left the manor, we'll make our move. Until then, we lay low." Valak made a makeshift bed of straw in the far corner of the cell. After extinguishing and hiding the lantern, he yanked me down. I curled on my side with my back to him, shivering in my wet clothes. Valak pulled some straw on top of us and wrapped an arm around me. He drew me close. I stiffened at the contact, but his body heat warmed me, and I soon relaxed into his grip. At first, every tiny noise made my heart race. But I shouldn't have worried. The commotion that ensued when our escape was discovered was deafening. Angry and accusing voices shouted. Search parties were organized and dispatched. It was agreed that we had an hour head start, but Brazel and Malkin argued on which direction we had taken.
"Valak's probably retreating west to well-known territory," Brazel stated with authority.
"South is the logical choice," Malkin insisted. "We have the commander. There's nothing they can do. They're running for their lives, not towards some strategic position. I'll take a horse and scan the forest with my magic."
Valak harumphed in my ear and whispered, "They actually think I would abandon the commander. They have no concept of loyalty." When the prison had been quiet and empty for a few hours, I grew bored and anxious to be gone. The door to the cells had remained wide open, allowing a faint light to illuminate our surroundings.
"Can we go now?" I asked.
"Not yet. I believe it's still daylight. We'll wait until dark." To help pass the time, I asked Valak how he had become involved with the commander. I thought it an unintrusive question, but he grew so quiet that I regretted asking it. After a long pause, he spoke. "My family lived in Icefaren province before it was renamed MD1. A particularly harsh winter collapsed the building that housed my father's leather business, ruining all of his equipment. He needed to replace his equipment to stay in business, but the soldiers who came to our house to collect the tax money wouldn't listen to reason." Valak's arm tightened around me. A minute stretched longer before he continued. "I was just a skinny little kid at the time,
but I had three older brothers. They were about Ari's size and had his strength. When my father told the soldiers that if he paid the full tax amount, he wouldn't have enough money left to feed his family, Valak paused for several heartbeats. They killed my brothers. They laughed and said, "Problem solved. Now you have three less mouths to feed." The muscles on Valak's arm trembled with tension. Naturally, I wanted revenge, but not on the soldiers. They were only messengers. I wanted the king, the man who had allowed his soldiers to murder my brothers in his name. So I learned how to fight, and I studied the assassin's art until I was unbeatable. I traveled around using my new skills to earn money. The royal upper class was so corrupt, they paid me to kill each other. Then I was commissioned to kill a young man named Ambrose, whose speeches called for rebellion and made the royals nervous. He'd become popular, gathering large crowds. People started to resist the king's doctrines. Then Ambrose disappeared, hiding his growing army and employing covert operations against the monarchy. My payment to find and kill Ambrose was significant. I ambushed him, expecting to have my knife in his heart before he could draw breath to cry out. But he blocked the blow, and I found myself fighting for my life and losing. Instead of killing me, though, Ambrose carved a C on my chest with my own knife. The same weapon, by the way, that I later used to kill the king. Then Ambrose declared himself my commander, and announced that I now worked for him and no one else. I agreed, and I promised him that if he got me close enough to kill the king, I would be loyal to him forever. My first assignment was to kill the person who had paid me to assassinate Ambrose. Throughout these years, I've watched him achieve his goals with a single-minded determination and without excess violence and pain. He hasn't been corrupted by power or greed. He's consistent and loyal to his people. And there's been no one in this world that I care for more. Until now. I held my breath. It had been a simple, innocent question. I hadn't expected such an intimate response. Yelena, you've driven me crazy. You've caused me considerable trouble, and I've contemplated ending your life twice since I've known you. Valak's warm breath in my ear sent a shiver down my spine. But you've slipped under my skin, invaded my blood, and seized my heart. That sounds more like a poison than a person, was all I could say. His confession had both shocked and thrilled me. Exactly, Valak replied. You have poisoned me. He rolled me over to face him. Before I could make another sound, he kissed me. Long-suppressed desire flared to life as I wrapped my arms around his neck, returning his kiss with equal passion. My response was a delightful surprise. I had feared, after Rayad's abuse, my body would clench tight in horror and revulsion, but the intertwining of our bodies linked our minds and spirits together. The distant sound of music vibrated in the air. Pulsing, the magical harmony soon rose to a crescendo and encompassed us like a warm blanket. The prison cell and filthy straw dropped away from our awareness. Whiteness draped in snowy silk surrounded us. On this plane, we were equals, partners. Our souls bonded. His pleasure was my ecstasy. My blood pumped in his heart. Utter bliss came in short snatches, although Valak and I were happy to try again. We had merged, our minds had become one. I drew in his essence, feasting on the feel of his body and mine, exhilarating in the caress of his skin against mine. He filled the hollow emptiness inside my heart with joy and light. Even though we lay in the grubby straw and faced an uncertain future, a deep hum of contentment vibrated throughout my body. Chapter 31. Reality and the rank odor of a decomposing animal intruded. Darkness had descended.
Let's go, Valak said, pulling me to my feet. Where? I asked, adjusting my uniform. The commander's room, so we can take him back to the castle with us.
Valak brushed the straw from his hair and clothes.
Won't work.
Why not? Valak demanded.
As soon as you touch him, Mogkin will know. I explained about Mogkin's link with the commander and how he had established that connection using Criollo.
How do we break the bond? Valak asked.
It was time to tell him about my magic. I felt lightheaded as if I stood on the edge of the world. Taking a deep breath, I related the encounters and conversations I'd had with Iris, and how she might be able to help us.
Valak stood still for a full minute while my heart thumped madly in my chest.
Do you trust her? He asked.
Yes.
Is there anything else you haven't told me?
My head spun. So much had happened, and we still needed to stop a powerful magician. Death was a real possibility. I wanted Valak to know how I felt.
I love you.
Valak wrapped me in his arms.
My love has been yours since the fire festival. If those goons had killed you, I knew then that I would never be the same.
I didn't want or expect this, but I couldn't resist you.
I molded my body to him, wanting to share his skin. He took my hand. Let's go.
We raided the guard room for uniforms before slipping into the hallway. Wearing Brazel's colors of black and green, we hoped to avoid discovery as we stole through the manor.
Valak needed his bag of tricks, so we headed toward the barracks. While I retrieved my cloak, Valak slid inside the empty wooden building. The soldiers had gone to search for us.
I paced in the shadows of the building, chanting Iris's name in my mind. We needed a plan of attack. We had to move tonight. Shouts and curses emanated from the barracks. Running inside, I found Ari and Jenko with their swords drawn and pointed at Valak.
Stop, I said.
Spotting me, Ari and Jenko sheathed their weapons, smiling.
We thought Valak had escaped without you, Ari said, giving me a bear hug.
Aren't you supposed to be with a search party? Valak asked as he pulled his black bag from under a bunk. He had changed into an ebony coverall with numerous pockets.
We're too sick, Jenko said, his best smirk in place.
What? I asked.
The charges against you were obviously fabricated, so we refused to take part in the hunt, Jenko said.
That's insubordination. Valak extracted a long knife and some darts from his bag.
That was the point. What's a fellow have to do around here in order to get arrested and thrown in the dungeon? Jenko asked.
I stared at Jenko in amazement. They had been willing to risk a court-martial in order to help me. He had meant what he had inscribed on my switchblade.
Which direction did the search parties go? Valak asked. He placed weapons in various pockets and strapped his sword and knife onto his belt.
Mainly south and east, although a few small groups were sent west and north, Ari replied.
Dogs?
Yes.
And the manor?
Minimal coverage.
Good. You're with us, Valak ordered them both.
They snapped to attention.
Yes, sir.
Prep for covert ops, but keep the swords. You're going to need them.
Valak finished dressing as Ari and Jenko got ready.
Wait, I said. I don't want them getting into trouble. My heart started to skitter around in my chest, and a nauseous wave threatened to send bile up my throat, as fear of what we were planning to do overcame me.
Valak squeezed my shoulder. We need their help.
You're going to need more than that.
Iris's voice came out of the darkness. Three men simultaneously drew their swords. When she stepped into the weak lantern light, Valak relaxed, but Ari and Jenko brandished their weapons.
At ease, Valak ordered.
Seeing their reluctance, I said, She's a friend. She's here to help. I looked at her. We discovered Mogkin's extra power source.
What is it?
I told her about the mindless captives and how they had been chained in circles, and then explained my theory that Mogkin had wiped their minds to seize their power. Horror and revulsion touched her face. Despite her rough exterior, her concern went deep. She managed to regain her no-nonsense frown, but Ari and Jenko looked a little green, as if they were going to be sick.
What's this all about? Ari asked.
I'll explain it later. Right now... I stopped short. A complete plan of attack snapped into my mind, but it included Ari and Jenko. I had been hoping to keep them safe, But Valak was right. We needed their help.
I want you to protect Iris with everything you have. It's very important, I told my friends.
Yes, sir, Ari and Jenko said together.
Stunned, I stared at them. They had addressed me as sir, meaning they would follow my orders, even if it led to their death.
Valak's eyes drilled into mine.
You have a strategy?
Yes.
Tell us.
Why, I thought, as Valak and I crept through the silent, empty halls of the manor, had I opened my mouth? My plan.
What did I know?
Valak, Ari, and Jenko had years of experience doing this nerve-wracking, stomach-turning work. But everyone risked their necks following my plan. In the dark corridor, I swallowed my fear and reviewed the strategy. At the commander's door, we waited to give the others time to move into position. My short breath seemed to echo off the walls, and I felt as if I was either going to scream or pass out. After a few moments, Valak picked the lock and we slipped inside. He secured the door. Lighting a lantern, he moved toward the oversized four-poster bed. The commander was stretched out on top of the bedding, fully clothed. His vacant eyes were open, staring at the ceiling. He made no acknowledgement of our presence. I sat beside him and took his hand in mine. Following Iris's brief instructions, I imagined my brick wall, then expanded it until I had built a dome of brick that encompassed us both. Valak pressed against the wall next to the door, waiting for Mogkin. His expression had hardened into his battle face. He was stone cold on the exterior, but I knew that a lethal, molten fury resided within. It wasn't long before a key turned in the lock. Silence. Then the door burst open. Four armed guards rushed in. Valak had one down before the man could react. The ringing of swords filled the room. Mogkin slinked into the chamber after his men had Valak fully engaged. Avoiding the fighting, he moved toward me. A condescending smile touched his lips.
A brick igloo. How nice. Come on, Yelena, give me some credit. A stone fortress or a steel wall would have been more of a challenge.
I felt a solid blow strike my mental defenses. Brick crumbled. Patching holes as he hammered on my shield, I prayed with desperation that Ari, Jenko, and Iris had made it to the room where Mogkin kept the prisoners chained. Iris had explained that she needed to be there with them in order to block Mogkin's extra power. Even if she succeeded, I would still have to deal with Mogkin's own magic. Halting his attack for a second, Mogkin jerked his head to the side, staring off into the distance.
Nice trick, he said. Friends of yours? They're in Rayad's hallway. But unless they can fight their way through 10 men, they won't make it to my children.
My heart sank. Mogkin resumed his onslaught with renewed determination. One guard out of four remained in battle with Valak. Hurry, I thought. My defenses weakened with each blow. I threw every ounce of strength into my wall, but it collapsed into a cloud of dust. Mogkin's power gripped me like a giant's fist around my ribcage. I yelped in pain and dropped the commander's hand. I stood on weak legs beside the bed just as Valak yanked his sword from the last guard's dead body.
Stop, or she dies, Mogkin ordered.
Valak froze. Three more guards hustled into the room, Brazel on their heels. They surrounded Valak. Taking his sword, they forced him to his knees with his hands on his head.
Go ahead, General. Kill her, Mogkin said, stepping back to let Brazel pass. I should have let you slit her throat the first day she arrived.
Why listen to Mogkin? I asked Brazel. He's not to be trusted. Pain crawled along my spine as Mogkin turned his burning eyes upon me.
What do you mean? Brazel demanded.
He gripped his sword as he glanced from me to Mogkin. Mogkin laughed.
She's only trying to delay the inevitable.
Like when you tried to delay the Sishan Treaty negotiations by poisoning the cognac? Or were you aiming to stop the delegation altogether? I asked him. Mogkin's shock revealed his guilt. Although surprise touched Valak's face, he remained silent. His body tensed, ready to spring into action.
That doesn't make sense, Brazel said.
Mogkin wants to avoid contact with the Southerners. They would know about... My throat closed. I clawed at my neck, unable to breathe. Brazel turned on Mogkin, his square face creased with anger.
What have you been up to?
We don't need a treaty with Sitya. We were getting our supplies without any problems. But you wouldn't listen to me. You had to be greedy. After establishing a trade treaty, it would only be a matter of time before we'd have southerners crossing the border, sniffing around, finding us.
Modkin showed no fear of Brazel, only anger that he had to explain his actions.
Now, do you want to kill her, or should I?
Spots spun in my eyes as my vision blurred. Before Brazel could answer, Modkin staggered. His hold on me slipped slightly, releasing my airway. I gasped for air.
My children, Modkin roared. Even without them, I still have more power than you.
Like a fish on a hook, I was yanked off my feet and hurled against the wall. My head banged on the stone. Pinned in midair, Modkin's power pelted me. Each blow felt like a boulder crashing into me. This is it, I thought. Rayad was right. Becoming the food taster had just delayed the inevitable. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Valak fighting his guards as he tried to reach Modkin. Too late for me. With a final surge of strength, I mentally reached out. I hit an impenetrable barrier as I felt my consciousness drain. Blackness filled my world. Then Iris's voice was there in my mind, soothing.
Here, she said, let me help you.
Pure power flowed into me. I reconstructed my mental shield and deflected Mogkin's onslaught, pushing him back. He crashed into the opposite wall with a satisfying thud. Confusion reigned in the commander's chambers. Inexperienced with magic as I was, I couldn't restrain Mogkin. He bolted from the room. With a knife in his hand, Valak fought three guards with swords. As I rushed to help Valak, Brazel grabbed my arm and spun me around to face him. He raised his sword. Murder blazed in his eyes. I jumped back to avoid the first swing of his sword and bumped against the commander's bed. I leaped onto the bed to avoid Brazel's next swing. I glanced down. The commander's gaze was still fixed on the ceiling. Brazel's third swing severed one of the bedposts. As I dived from the end of the bed to avoid another blow, I seized the post from the floor. Now I was armed. The post wasn't balanced properly for a bow, but it was thick, better than nothing. Brazel was a powerful opponent. Each swing of his sword hacked chunks out of my weapon. At first, he scoffed at my attempts to fight him.
What do you think you're doing? You're a skinny nothing. I'll gut you in two moves.
When I found my mental zone of power, he stopped wasting his breath. Even sensing his next attack, I still scrambled to stay one step ahead of him. My wooden post was no match for his sword. Rayad's ghost materialized in the room. He cheered his father on, trying to distract me. His tactics worked. My back hit the wall. Brazel's sword split my post in half.
You're dead.
With gleeful satisfaction, Brazel pulled his sword back to slash at my neck, but I still held a part of the wood. As his sword swung close, I deflected the weapon downward with my broken post. The tip cut across my waist. The sound of ripping fabric accompanied a line of fire across my stomach. Blood soaked the ripped ends of my uniform shirt. Then Brazel made his first error. Thinking I was finished, he relaxed his guard, but I was still on my feet. I raised my weapon. With desperate strength, I struck him across the temple. We crumpled to the floor together. I gazed at the ceiling, trying to regain my breath. Valak hovered over me. I shooed him away. Find Modkin. He disappeared from my view. Once strength returned to my limbs, I examined my wound. Running a finger along the gash, I thought all I needed was some of Rand's glue. Rayad's ghost floated over me, sneering. I couldn't bear lying on the ground with him in the room. Cursing and bleeding, I stood.
You, I stabbed a bloody finger at him. Go away. Make me, he challenged.
How could I fight a ghost? I moved into a defensive stance. He scoffed. No, not a physical fight, a mental one. I thought about what I had accomplished in the year and a half since I had slit Rayad's throat. Overcoming my fears to make friends, confronting my enemies, finding love, how I felt about myself, who I was. I looked into the gilded floor-length mirror of the commander's room. My hair was wild, my shirt soaked with blood, my face streaked with dirt. almost the same reflection when I first became the food taster. But this time, there was something different. The shadows of doubt were gone. I peered deeper and found my soul, a little tattered and with some holes, but there all the same. It had always been there, I realized with a shock. If Rayad and Magkin had truly driven it from me, I would be chained to a floor right now and not standing over Brazel's unconscious form. I was in control. This new person in the mirror was free, free of all poisons. I glanced at Brazel. He was still breathing, but I was in charge of him and of myself. In command, no longer a victim, no longer the rat caught in the metal jaws of a trap. "Be gone," I ordered Rayad's ghost. His shocked expression gave me great joy as he vanished. But joy was like a butterfly alighting on a hand, a brief rest before flying away.
"Jinko's hurt."
Iris's alarmed voice resounded in my skull.
"We need a medic. Come now."
Using manacles from a dead guard's belt, I handcuffed Brazel to the heavy bed. Then I bolted from the room. I raced through the corridors. He can't die, I thought. Not Jenko. I wouldn't be able to bear his death. Horrible scenarios played in my mind. I was so preoccupied that I rushed right toward Valak and Magkin without even recognizing them. They dueled with swords. The reason the scene had taken a while to clarify in my mind was because Magkin had the upper hand. Valak's pale face was haggard. He swung his sword as if it was a dead weight. His natural grace had fled, and what remained were sporadic, jerky movements. Magkin, on the other hand, was quick and competent, technically accurate, but lacking style. My disbelief and concern grew as I watched the match. What was wrong with Valak? Was it Magkin's magic? No, Valak was immune to it, I thought. Then realization dawned. Valak had said being close to a magician felt like wading in thick syrup. And Valak had fought 7 guards in the commander's room after spending the last 2 days in the dungeon without food or sleep. Exhaustion had finally caught up to him. Magkin's grin widened when he spotted me hovering nearby. He executed a lightning-quick feint and then lunged. Valak's sword clattered to the floor as a crimson slash snaked up his arm.
"What an incredible day," Magkin exclaimed. "I get to kill the famous Valak and the infamous Yelena at the same time."
I triggered my switchblade. Magkin laughed. He sent me a magical command to drop my weapon. Just as my hand released the blade, I heard Iris's voice in my head.
"Yelena, what's wrong? Did you find the medic?"
"I need help," I cried in my mind. Power swelled inside me, pushing to break free. I aimed a finger of power toward Magkin. His sword dropped from his hand. Terror gripped his face as the magic swaddled him like a baby, then tightened like a noose. He was paralyzed, rooted to the floor.
"You rat-spawned daughter of a demon," Magkin cursed. "You're a blight on this earth, an incarnation of hell. You're just like the rest of them. The Zoltana bloodline should be burned out, erased, exterminated."
Magkin raged on, but I ceased to listen. Valak picked up my switchblade. Magkin's curses grew louder and more frantic as Valak approached him. A blur of movement, a shriek of pain. Then Magkin was finally silent. His body sank into a heap on the ground. Valak handed me the bloody knife. With an exhausted bow, he said, "My love, for you." Chapter 32. I gasped, remembering. "Jenko!" Grabbing Valak's arm, I dragged him with me, explaining between huffs of breath. Still wearing Brazel's colors, although torn and bloodstained, we roused the medic, who, with peevish annoyance, fussed about protocol and proper authority until Valak drew his knife. My stomach heaved when we entered Rayad's wing. The hallway leading to the captive's room was gruesome. Soldiers littered the floor. Pieces of arms and legs were scattered about as if someone had hacked their way through them. The walls were splattered with blood and pools of scarlet dotted the floor. The medic wanted to stop at the first man, but Valak yanked him to his feet. Stepping carefully around the bodies, we reached the doorway. Just inside, I saw Jenko lying on his side with his head in Ari's lap. He was unconscious, which was a good thing since a sword had skewered his stomach, the bloody tip poking from his back. Ari's gore-splashed face held a grim expression. A crimson-coated axe, the weapon responsible for the carnage in the hallway, rested next to him. Iris sat cross-legged in the center of the circle of emaciated people. Her brow glistened with sweat. Her expression was distant. The chained women and men viewed the scene with dispassionate eyes. The trip to the infirmary was a chaotic nightmare. Everything blurred together like a whirlwind until I found myself lying in a bed next to Jenko, holding his hand. The medic did his best, but if the sword had pierced any vital organs, or if there was internal bleeding, Jenko wouldn't survive. Twice during the night, Ari and I despaired that we would lose him. My own wound had been cleaned and sealed with Rand's glue, but I hardly noticed or cared about the throbbing pain. I aimed all my energy and strength toward Jenko, willing him to live. Late the next day, I woke from a light doze.
"Sleeping on the job?" Jenko whispered with a weak smile on his ashen face.
I breathed a sigh of relief. Surely if he was strong enough to insult me, then he was on his way to recovery. Unfortunately, Iris couldn't say the same about the commander. 4 days after Mogkin's death, he still hadn't regained his spirit. His advisors had rebounded from their brief ensorcelment, and they had commandeered Brazel's manor while waiting for the commander to return. They assumed temporary control of the military district. Messengers were sent north to General Tesso of MD4, and west to General Hazal of MD6, requesting their immediate presence. The generals would have the authority to determine what the next step would be, in case the commander failed to revive. Just as confusing was the fact that none of Brazel, Mogkin, and Rayad's victims woke to Iris's probing. She had tried to enter their minds, to break through to where their self-awareness was hiding. Iris reported that their minds were like abandoned houses, fully furnished, with embers still smoking in the fireplace, but no one home. Iris and I resigned ourselves to the knowledge that the victims would live out their days unaware of their new comfortable surroundings in Brazel's guest wing. I mourned over the loss of my friend Kara. Iris had sought out the rooms used by the orphans and reported that May was still there, alive and well. I planned to visit with May as soon as Jenko regained some of his strength.
"It's obvious that the children in Brazel's orphanage were kidnapped from Sitia," Iris explained, visiting me in the infirmary at Jenko's bedside. "Mogkin's ring of child thieves spaced their abductions far enough apart to avoid detection. Magic is usually stronger in women, and that explains why there are more girls. The kidnappers targeted bloodlines where magic was present, although they took a gamble with children that young. There's no way to be sure the power will develop. Mogkin and Brazel must have planned this for a long time."
Iris raked her fingers through her long brown hair.
"Finding your family shouldn't be too difficult."
I blinked at her in shock. "You're joking, right?"
"Why would I joke?"
She was unaware of the emotional tailspin she'd caused me. She was right. Joking wasn't her style, so I thought for a moment. "Before he died, Mogkin said something about the Zoltana bloodline."
"Zoltana!"
Wiping away her usual serious expression, Iris laughed. It was like the sun coming out after weeks of rain.
"I think they did lose a girl." "My goodness, you're in for a real surprise if you're part of the Zoltana clan." "That would explain why you alone didn't cave in under Mogkin's spell."
Questions hovered on my lips. I wanted to know more about this family, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. There was the possibility that I wasn't a Zoltana. I guess I would find out when I reached Sitia. Iris wanted to start my magical training right away. Uneasiness hovered in my chest whenever I thought of leaving Ixia. I changed the subject. "How's the commander?" Iris confessed her frustration.
"He's different from the children. There's nothing in their minds, but he's retreated to a white place. If I can only find where he is, then I might be able to bring him back."
I considered this for a while and thought back to a time in the war room when I had fallen asleep. May I try?
Why not?
I made sure Jenko was comfortable and had everything he desired. Iris accompanied me to the commander's room. The bodies had been removed and someone had attempted to clean up. I perched on the edge of the commander's bed and took his cold hand in mine. Following Iris's instructions, I closed my eyes, sending my mental awareness toward him. My feet crunched on ice. A cold wind stabbed my face and filled my lungs with tiny daggers. Dazzling white surrounded me. Diamond dust or snowflakes, it was hard to tell. I walked for a while and was immediately confused by the sparkling blizzard. Stumbling through the storm, I fought to remain calm and to remind myself that I was not lost. Whenever I took a step forward, the icy wind drove me back. I was about to admit defeat when I remembered why I had thought I could find the commander. Focusing on the scene of a young woman exulting over a slain snowcat caused the wind to stop and the blizzard to clear. I stood next to Ambrose. She was dressed in heavy white hunting furs that resembled the skin of the cat. "Come back," I said.
"I can't," she said, pointing into the distance.
Thin black bars surrounded us on all sides. A birdcage was my first impression, but upon closer scrutiny I could see that the bars were soldiers armed with swords.
"Every time I tried to leave, they pushed me back."
Fury flamed in her face before dying into weary. "But you're the commander."
"Not here. Here I am just Ambrosia trapped inside my mistake of a body. The soldiers know about my curse."
I searched my mind for a reply. The guards didn't belong to Mogkin, they belonged to her. My eyes were drawn to the snowcat's carcass. "How did you kill the cat?" Her face came alive as she recounted how she had bathed in snowcat scent and spent weeks cloaked in snowcat furs, pretending to be one of the animals until they allowed her to be part of their pack. In the end, it was only a matter of time and the perfect opportunity to make the kill.
"Proof that I was really a man, that I had won the right to be a man."
"Then perhaps you need to wear your prize," I suggested. "Skins will not help you against that lot." I jerked my head at the ring of guards. Comprehension widened the woman's golden eyes. She gazed at the slain cat, then morphed into the commander. Her shoulder-length hair shortened into his buzz cut, fine lines of age growing on her face as he emerged. The white furs dropped to the ground as his wrinkle-free uniform materialized. He stepped away from the skins, kicking them dismissively.
"You shouldn't do that," I said. "She's a part of you. You might need her again."
"And do I need you, Yelena? Can I trust you to keep my mutation a secret?" the commander asked with a fierce intensity.
"I came here to bring you back. Isn't that answer enough?"
"Valak swore me a blood oath of loyalty when I carved my initial on his chest. Would you do the same?"
"Does Valak know about Ambrosia?" I asked.
"No. You haven't answered my question."
I showed the commander Valak's butterfly. "I wear this against my chest. I've pledged my loyalty to Valak, who is faithful to you." The commander reached for the butterfly. I stood still as he removed it from my necklace. He took a knife from the skins and sliced it across his right palm. Holding the pendant in his bloody hand, he extended the knife toward me. I held out my right hand, wincing as the knife bit into it. Our blood mixed as I shook his hand with the butterfly wedged between our palms. When he released his grip, Valak's gift was in my hand. I returned it to its proper place over my heart.
"How do we get back?" he asked.
"You're the commander."
His eyes rested on the dead cat. Looking around at the ring of soldiers, he drew his sword.
"We fight," he said.
I pulled the spear from the cat's side and wiped the blood on the snow. Feeling the weight of the weapon in my grip, I swung it around in a few practice moves. It was lighter than a bow and a bit off balance by the metal tip, but it would work. We charged the men. The circle of guards tightened immediately around us. Back to back, the commander and I fought. The men were skilled, but the commander was a master swordsman.
He had bested Valak and killed a snowcat. It was like fighting with five more defenders by my side. When I sunk the spear's tip into one guard's heart, he exploded into a shower of snow crystals that floated away with the wind. Time slowed as I hacked at one man after another, until finally time snapped to the present. I whirled around searching for an opponent, only to discover that we had dispatched all the men. Snow swirled around us.
"Nice work," the commander said. "You helped me rediscover my true self, killing off my demons."
He took my hand and pressed it to his lips. The wintry scene melted, and I found myself back on the bed, looking into the commander's powerful eyes. That night, Valak and I briefed the commander on all that had happened since the General's Brandy meeting. Valak had Brazel interrogated and discovered that Brazel and Mogkin had been planning a coup for the past 10 years. Brazel told me that Mogkin showed up at his manor with a group of children, Valak said. He was looking for a place to hide, and he struck a deal with Brazel to help Brazel become the next commander. Once Mogkin achieved enough power to reach your mind from MD5, they started feeding you Criollo, sir.
What about the factory? The commander asked.
We have halted production, Valak said.
Good. Salvage what equipment you can, then burn the factory and any Criollo to the ground.
Yes, sir.
Anything else?
One more interesting item. Brazel said that once he and Mogkin had control of Ixia, they planned to take over Citia. The next day, the commander held court with Valak standing at his right side. Brazel was brought before him to face charges. As expected, Brazel was stripped of his rank and sentenced to spend the rest of his life in the commander's dungeon. Permitted a few last words, Brazel shouted,
"You fools! Your commander's a deceiver. You've been lied to for years. The commander's really a woman dressed as a man."
Silence blanketed the room, but the commander's neutral expression never faltered. Soon, laughter echoed off the stone walls. Brazel was hauled away amid cheers and jeers. Who would believe the ravings of a madman? Obviously, no one. I thought about their jeers. They laughed not because the idea of a woman in power was so ridiculous, but because Commander Ambrose had a powerful presence. His frank and abrupt dealings were so honest and forthright that the thought of him deceiving anyone was laughable. And due to his beliefs and convictions about himself, even though I knew the truth, I could not think of him in any other way. Later in the day, I went to visit the orphanage. I found May in the dormitory. This time, happy memories followed me as I walked through the rooms used by the orphans. When she saw me, May bounced off the bed and wrapped herself around me. "Yelena, I thought I would never see you again," she gushed. I squeezed her tight. When she pulled back, I smiled to see her crooked skirt and messy ponytail. As I braided her hair, May chattered about what had happened since I had left. Her excitement faded when she talked about Kara, and it was then that I could see how much she had grown. When I finished her hair, she said, "We're going with you to Citia." May spun in a circle, unable to remain still. She waved toward a suitcase on the floor.
"What?"
"That lady from the south told us that she would take us home, to find our families." A brief pang clenched my heart. Family had a different meaning to me. Valak, Ari, and Jenko felt like my family, and even Marin seemed like a grumpy older sister. "That's wonderful," I said to May, trying to match her enthusiasm. May stopped her dance for a moment. "There are so few of us left," she said in a sedate voice. "Valak will make sure Kara and the others are taken good care of." "Valak, he's so handsome," May laughed, and was so delightful I couldn't resist hugging her again. Jenko, on the other hand, greeted me with a gloomy face when I stopped to say goodbye. Iris, anxious to head south, wanted to be on the road in the morning. Ari had taken over my role of nurse and was sitting next to Jenko. "Whatever happened to sieges weathered, fight together, friends forever?" I asked him, quoting his message on my switchblade. Jenko's eyes lit up.
"You little fox. Figured it out already, have you?"
I smirked.
"As soon as Jenko's better, we're coming south," Ari said.
And what would you do there? I asked.
Work on our tans, Jenko said, smiling. I could use a vacation.
Protect you, Ari said.
I don't need protection in the South, I said, and I seem to remember that not long ago, I bested two of my instructors.
She's cocky already, Jenko sighed. We can't go with her now. She'll be swaggering and boasting and generally obnoxious. It's bad enough I have to deal with that from Ari. I could never handle two.
Besides, I said, you'll be bored.
Ari grumped and crossed his massive arms, looking sour.
First sign of trouble, you send us a message and we'll be there. You got that? Ari asked.
Yes, sir, I said. Don't worry about me, Ari. I'll be fine. And I'll be back.
You'd better, Jenko said. I want a rematch.
But I had spoken too soon about returning. Valak, Iris, and I had discussed my future, but the commander seemed to have other plans. Commander Ambrose called for a formal meeting that evening. With just Valak, Ari, and Iris in attendance in Brazil's old office, the commander agreed to honor the trade treaty, even though it had been enacted under Mogkin's influence. Then he told me my fate.
Yelena, he began in a formal tone, you have saved my life, and for that, I thank you. But you have magical abilities that are not tolerated in Ixia. I have no choice but to sign an order for your execution.
Valak placed a warning hand on Ari's shoulder to prevent him from charging the commander. Ari stayed still, but his outrage was evident in his face. When the commander held a paper out to Valak, coldness crept along my skin, leaving behind a numb feeling of dread. Valak didn't move.
Sir, I've always believed that having a magician work for us would be beneficial, and could have prevented this particular situation, Valak said. We can trust her.
A valid point.
The commander drew back his arm, resting it on the desk.
Even though we trust her, even though she saved my life, I must follow the code of behavior. To do otherwise would be a sign of weakness, something I can't afford right now, especially after this business with Mogkin. Plus, the generals and my advisors will not trust her.
Once again, the commander extended the execution order to Valak. In my frantic mind, I heard Iris telling me to flee. She would attempt to slow Valak down. No, I told her. I would see this to the end. I would not run away.
I won't take it, Valak said in a flat voice. He betrayed no emotion. You would disobey a direct order? The commander asked.
No. If I don't take the order, then I won't have to disobey it.
And if I make it a verbal order?
I will obey. But it will be my very last task for you. Valak pulled a knife off his belt.
The ring of steel sounded as Ari unsheathed his sword.
You'll have to get through me first, he said, stepping in front of me. Ari had a better than average chance of beating Valak, but I knew he wouldn't win, and I didn't want him to try.
No, Ari, I said. I pushed his sword arm down and stood next to Valak. Our eyes met. I understood that Valak's loyalty to the commander was without question. His blue eyes held a fierce determination, and I knew in my soul that Valak would take his own life after he had taken mine.
The commander gazed at us with a quiet consideration. I felt time freeze under his scrutiny.
I've signed the order per the code, the commander finally said. I will assign someone else to carry it out. It may take a few days for me to find a suitable person.
He looked at me and Iris, a hint that we needed to get on the road as soon as possible.
This order is valid in Ixia only. You're all dismissed.
The office emptied in a hurry. I was giddy with relief as Ari swept me into one of his bear hugs and whooped with joy. But then my heart seized with pain as I realized that I would be parted from Valak so soon after we had joined. After Iris and Ari left to organize the escape, Valak pulled me aside. We kissed with passion and a desperate urgency. After we drew apart to catch our breaths, I said, "Come with me." It wasn't a plea or a question. It was an invitation. Valak's blue eyes closed with pain. "I can't." I turned away, feeling like one of Valak's black statues, but he drew me back.
Yelena, you need to learn. You need to find your family. You need to spread your wings and see how far you can fly. You don't need me right now, but the commander needs me. I clung to Valak. He was right. I didn't need him, but I wanted him to be with me forever. We left that night. Iris led our ragtag group. 8 girls and 2 boys from Brazil's orphanage followed Iris through the forest toward the southern border. I took the rear guard position to make sure everyone stayed together and to make sure no one tailed our group. We hiked for a few hours until we found a suitable clearing to camp for the night. More than adequate provisions for our journey had been provided by Ari. I smiled, remembering his lecture to me about staying out of trouble. Just like an overprotective brother, he wasn't content until I promised to send him a message if I needed help. I would miss him and Jenko dearly. We set up 6 small tents in a circle. Iris amazed the children as she set fire to the kindling with a magical flourish. After everyone had gone to sleep, I sat by the fire, stirring the dying embers. Unwilling to join May in our tent, I gazed at the single flame that erupted when I poked at the fire. It danced by itself for an audience of 1. I wondered for the 100th time why Valak hadn't come to say goodbye, fingering my pendant. I sensed movement. Jumping up, I drew my bow. A shadow detached from a tree. Iris had created a magical barrier around our tents. According to her, the barrier would deflect a person's vision, so all he would see was an empty clearing. The shadow stopped at the edge, unaffected by the magic, and smiled at me. Valak. He held out a hand. I grasped his cold fingers with both hands as he led me away from the tents and deeper into the forest. "Why didn't you come before we left?" I asked him when we stopped at the base of a tree. The roots of the massive oak had broken through the ground, creating small protective hollows. I was busy making sure the commander would have a hard time locating someone to carry out his orders. Valak grinned with vicious delight. It's amazing how much work there is cleaning up after Brazil. I thought about what that cleanup would entail. Who is tasting the commander's food? I asked. For now, I am. But I believe Captain Stahl would make an excellent candidate. Since she knows who all the assassins are, I think her help will be invaluable. It was my turn to smile. Star would do well if she passed the training. If. Enough talk, Valak said, guiding me down between the roots. I need to give you a proper send-off. My last night in Ixia was spent with Valak beneath the tree. The hours till dawn flew by. The rising sun intruded, waking me from a contented doze in Valak's arms, forcing me to face the day that I had to leave him. Sensing my mood, Valak said, "An execution order hasn't kept us apart before. There are ways to get around it. We will be together." "Is that an order?" "No, a promise." To my husband Rodney, for all the support he has given, is giving, and will give, I'm spoiled rotten. In loving memory of Francis Snyder, Jeanette and Joseph Scarrato. They would talk to you and make jokes while they were feeding you poison. Kathy Brandt on chemotherapy, a good friend who lost the battle. This has been an Audible Inc. and Harlequin production of Poison Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman. Executive Producer, Beth Anderson. Supervising Producer, Arthur G. Insana. Produced and directed by Michelle McGonigal. Engineered by John Clem. Music composed by Michael Whalen. Post-production and music supervisor, George James. Copyright 2005, Maria V. Snyder. Production copyright 2005 by Audible Inc. All rights reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or in part in any form. This edition is published by arrangement with Harlequin Books, S.A. All characters in this book are fictitious. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.